Hi, this is Jim with today's edition of Concert Billboard for Tuesday, July 24th. At Northfork Theatre at Westbury is KC and the Sunshine Band, Gloria Gaynor and the Family Stone. In concert at Jones Beach is Poison, Rat, Tramp's White Lion, and Veins of Jenna. It's a free show at the John J. Burns Town Park in Massapequa with performers from the Lawrence Welk Show, the Dick Dale, Joanne Castle, and a bunch of others. It's another free show at Hexer Park in Huntington at 8:30 p.m. with Billy Jonas. In the city, for Tuesday the 24th, at Cornelius Street Cafe is Dan Friedman. In concert at Madison Square Garden are the White Stripes, and at Crash Mansion is Ashley First with Melinda Bartos. Coming up Wednesday, July 25th, at Mulcahy's in Wanto at 8 o'clock is Social Distortion, The Heart Attacks, and The Hangmen. At the Babylon Village Pool is the Babylon Village Bayfest with Little Toby Walker, Red Molly, Positions Dancers, and the Boys and Girls Steel Drum Band. Some free shows going on at Syosset Woodbury Community Park with Lou Minetta and Gail Scott, the Town Green in Southold Hamlet with Galaxy, and the Hexer Park in Huntington with the Huntington Community Band. Over at Old Westbury Gardens are the Day Trippers. The Yonder Mountain String Band is playing Stephen Torkas, and at NASA Coliseum is Josh Groban. That's all for Wednesday the 25th. If you want to know about more shows, go to website at WUSB.FM and click on Concert Billboard. And here's the thought of the day from Steve Martin. He said, "All I've ever wanted was an honest week's pay for an honest day's work." And thanks for listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
Where we've just proven that people who say there's nothing going on in Long Island don't know what they're talking about. This is WUSB in Stony Brook. Time on a Tuesday evening for another edition of Off the Wall. And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday, the 24th day of July, 2007. Right in the thick of summer. No getting around it now. And we've learned a lot. We've learned quite a few things so far this summer. One thing I learned last week is that the streets of New York can just blow up at any time without any warning whatsoever. Did you guys see that story? Those of you around the world, I had to tell a few people this because not everybody is tied in to all the news outlets. But yeah, it was just a week ago tomorrow that the steam pipe blew up near Grand Central Station, and just looking at the video of the force, the veracity of the explosion, it makes you amazed that only one person lost their life in that. We don't need Al-Qaeda to destroy things. We can do it ourselves. Our infrastructure is crumbling. The pipes under the city of New York are over 80 years old. They could give way at any moment. All it takes is a mixture of hot water, hot steam, and cold water. That's simple. That's simple. You don't need to be a chemist. You just need to somehow mix hot and cold. And boom, you have an explosion and a frozen zone and all kinds of mayhem and chaos, asbestos everywhere. It's unbelievable. But that's the state of our infrastructure. It really is. It's just basically put together on spit and a promise, whatever that means. I'm surprised that more things like this have not happened. And that's only one small bit of our infrastructure. That's only the steam pipes. A lot of people didn't even know existed. Yeah, there's always steam coming up in the streets of New York. Nobody quite knows why. But apparently that's how we get our heat. That's how we get our air conditioning. Central air apparently goes through the streets. Other cities, they do it differently, I guess. Certainly other more modern cities do it differently. To fix this, to make it work right, to make it so that there's not a threat of a street exploding at any moment, would cost so much money that we couldn't afford to have any more wars. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants that kind of a sacrifice, but that's what we're facing right now. Yeah, it's sobering, I know. I had the idea this week, and tell me if this doesn't make sense, if it's too humiliating or embarrassing, but since we don't seem to know how to do things anymore like we used to do, where we can't build bridges, remember, well, I don't remember, but some people out there might remember, when bridges were built, the Verrazano Bridge, I think that was built in the 60s, not that long ago, and the Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan, we have a lot of bridges over there, a lot of bridges, and that's not the only place in the country we have bridges, but they were built pretty quickly. And we had a better subway system, believe it or not. 40 years ago, there were more subway lines than there are now. There was the 2nd Avenue L, the 3rd Avenue L, the 6th Avenue L, all kinds that they tore down and never replaced. There was a whole trolley system in Brooklyn that was bought out by the automobile companies, run into the ground, and taken out of business, replaced by polluting buses. That's true. You can look that one up somewhere, but that is actually what happened. In cities like Detroit, the mass transit system, trains, trolleys, whatever it was they had, it was all torn down and never replaced. And if you go through the streets of Detroit, you'll just see lots of empty streets. Streets aren't even maintained. And if you don't have a car or a thumb, I don't think there's any way you're going to get around that city. Oh, yeah, there are some buses, but no mass transit to compare with what other cities and other parts of the world have. Now, New York has a fairly decent mass transit system. Don't get me wrong on that. But what we can do for commuter rails and intercity rails, it just simply boggles the imagination how much work is ahead of us if we even want to take this seriously. So the idea I came up with, and again, tell me if I'm being offensive here, we obviously can't do it. We can't. I mean, look around you. We're not capable of even fixing potholes in the streets. I don't know what our problem is. We've got some sort of a blockage in the mentality that involves fixing things and making things better. We want to make things worse. We want to make things as appalling as possible. Turn on each other. Let things deteriorate. See how bad it can get. It makes for good drama, for good fiction, good inspiration for things like that. And also it makes going away a lot more pleasant, because when you go to other places, you say, wow, this is so cool. We don't have this back home. You can actually get on a train and go someplace. And it's fast. And it's comfortable. And it's cheap. Wow. And all the people have to do is pay a little bit more in taxes. Well, we can't have that at home. Can't pay more taxes. No, sir. All our tax dollars are going into the military anyway. So, God forbid any of that goes towards social programs. Seriously, guys, you know, social programs and socialism, they start with the same two syllables. You ever wonder why that was? Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, then. So that's out. Okay, that's off the table. Off the table like impeachment is off the table. We're not going to do it. But other people can. Other people in other parts of the world can do this for us. Now, I'm not talking about enslaving people and bringing them over here and forcing them to do it, as is our way. No, let's break with that tradition and try something else. How about we have people in foreign lands, mainly Asia and the Mideast, people with all the money and all the ability to build things. The tallest building in the world is about to be unveiled in Dubai. And in Shanghai, they have bullet trains, maglev trains, all kinds of projects being put up overnight, it seems. People have a lot of energy, a lot of spirit, and a lot of money. So why not simply have these people run the whole show? Yeah, they are the investors. They are the ones paying for it. They are the ones doing the work. And yeah, they're the ones that will own it in the end. I mean, is that so bad? Wouldn't you like to have a nice high-speed railway go from, say, New York to Chicago and get you there in 4 hours? And if the only catch is that it's owned by the Chinese, I mean, hell, I can live with that. Who owns it now? I don't. You don't. Somebody does, and they're not doing a very good job. So, yeah, you know, American know-how, it's just, it's not doing it for me anymore. It's just not. And we have to do better. Streets blowing up under your feet. I mean, come on, that right there, it's a danger sign. If that's not a cry for help, I don't know what is. And we need help. So consider this an appeal to all the rich countries out there and rich regions of the world that are booming. All right? Help us, please. Consider us one of those third world countries, one of those underdeveloped lands. Now, while we do, in fact, pollute more than anybody else, and we have more material goods than anybody else, and we waste more than anybody else, we are still more impoverished than you can possibly imagine. And we need your help. Please. Build us some bridges. Build us some rail lines. Build us streets that don't explode. Nice buildings that don't take 10 years to put up. And when I was in China, they're building buildings day and night, somehow not making any noise while they're doing it. That's a technology we seem to have missed out on, too. I just think it would be really nice, and it's the only chance we're going to have to improve things in our lifetime, because it's sure not going to come from the people in D.C. now, or the people in D.C. later. I just don't think there's something in the mentality. There's something in our mentality that refuses to allow us to move ahead. Just look at national health. We can't get that down. What so many other countries have managed, what every other developed nation in the West seems to have managed. Can't do that. And if you haven't gone out and seen Sicko yet, shame on you. Did I not say to see that film weeks ago? And you still haven't done it. What's going on? Does my word mean nothing anymore? All right, I know a lot of you have seen it, and thank you. I'm glad you did. I'm sure you learned something from it, and I'd like to hear feedback about it. But those of you who haven't, and I can tell who hasn't seen it, because they say, I don't want to see a film about all these people who don't have insurance. I know it's a problem. Well, you know, you big fool, it's not about people who don't have insurance. It's about people who do have insurance, people who do have health insurance, and what they have to go through, and how claims are denied, and how people actually die as a result of that. That's what goes on in our land. The richest land in the world? I don't think so. I don't think we're the richest land in the world. I don't think you can measure it just by, I don't even know how they're measuring it now. Certainly not by happiness. Certainly not by wealth. Certainly not by happiness. I mean, we're the richest nation insofar as invading other countries, I suppose, if you can measure it that way. I mean, the Dow fell 200 points today. Why do I know this? This is more information that should not be in my head that's taking up valuable real estate. Yet, I know the Dow fell a lot, and I know it doesn't affect me in the slightest. Yet, we're all fixated on this. Oh, the Dow did good today. Well, that's good for everybody. No, it's not. It's not going to affect you at all. It might affect people who invest in certain things, but even if you believe in the trickle-down effect, it's really not going to have much of a difference. Your potholes still aren't going to get fixed. You're not going to get any better health coverage. Maybe the price of milk will go up or down a penny or something, but let's face reality here. It's really not going to affect us all that much. What affects us is our standing in the rest of in the eyes of the rest of the world, the things that we actually do, what our people are free to do. Are we free to have 6 weeks off of our jobs per year, like so many other parts of the world do? No, we're lucky if we get a week or two. Simply unbelievable. The misery we put ourselves through for no reason. Okay, this isn't anything that I was planning on talking about tonight. Actually, I wanted to mention that for the last 10 days and for the foreseeable future, do you know what I've been doing? I've been driving with my brights on. Yeah, I've been doing this. My headlights, I've been having them on the bright setting. Reason being that yet again, this is for the old car, not the smart car. This is for the 1993 Tercel, which has almost 250,000 miles on it. Very proud of this car. Great car. But the headlights keep burning out on average about once every year, 18 months or so. And when one goes, it's really smart to replace them both, because what's going to happen is you're going to get one replaced, and then a week later the other one's going to go out. And you're never going to remember which one you replace. And you're going to think, did the one I just replaced go out, or is that the other one? This way, if you replace them both at the same time, then you know if they go out in a week that something is wrong. Personally, I think something's wrong if they go out every year, but regardless. Point is, the headlight went out, but if I switch to the bright mode, I have what appear to be headlights. They're very bright headlights, but they are two headlights. In our country, the moment you do anything wrong, you get called on it. And this has happened to me twice, where my headlight burned out, and inside of a half hour of driving, I got pulled over and given a ticket for this. Now, I'm not saying that I don't believe in road safety. People should be admonished if they're doing something unsafe. But just the way we have these watchful eyes out all the time, waiting for somebody to screw up in some way. One headlight. And I've seen plenty of cars with one headlight going around. There's no shortage of that. I've seen cops with one headlight going around. So, I mean, it's a common enough thing, but it just seems like we're always out there looking for some kind of a mistake, some kind of a fault, so that we can immediately pounce upon it. I mean, watch a cop on the expressway, on a freeway. If you're driving someplace and you see a cop get on the road, see if you can hold your breath until the point where he pulls somebody over for doing something. They're always out there looking for fault, and they always find it. And almost every time I see a cop on the expressway, he's about to pull somebody over. And you don't even know why. Maybe it's just because he doesn't like the way they turned. Doesn't like the way they looked. You can do it for any reason at all. So anyway, yeah, I've been driving around with my brights on. My point in doing this is not to be obnoxious. My point is to do this until I get the headlight replaced. And I did get the headlight replaced, but then I tried to get it installed at the place that that sold it to me. And they said, yeah, we can install it for you. It's going to cost you $15 per headlight, which the last time I did this didn't cost anything. I just tipped the guy. And there's a two-hour wait. Two-hour wait to get headlights installed. I mean, come on. So obviously I couldn't wait around. And I'm not able to make an appointment. They don't take appointments for this kind of a thing. So I have to sort of find somebody that can do this quickly and for not maybe that much money. So I'm driving around with two spare headlights now in my car and still using the brights. Now, the point of bringing this up is that in all the time I've been doing this, all the time I've been driving around with my brights on, feeling terrible about it, because I'm pointing high beam headlights into people's eyes. It's not right. But I don't want to get pulled over for having one headlight that I can't really fix. And no, I can't fix it myself. All right, I know what you're saying. It's a simple thing to replace a headlight. Trust me, it's not. Not for me. You need a special screwdriver. If I get involved in this, I will have a car with no headlights, and that's a lot worse. I believe mechanics have a special knowledge that they're trained for and that should not be messed with. I remember a friend of mine once said, you know, Emmanuel, it's a simple thing. You want to replace a windshield washer blade. I can do it in 5 minutes. You don't have to go to the mechanic to get something that simple. You have a replacement windshield washer blade that fits all cars. Well, 3 hours later, I had this this contraption that was sort of modified with screwdrivers and bolts and things like that to fit onto my windshield washer, because apparently it didn't fit all cars. All these complications. And that's what happens. Whenever I get involved in anything involving hardware of any sort, there are complications. Which is why, you know I could probably learn it. I know I'd be a better person if I did. But you know what? I'd be so much later doing all the other things I need to do. And there are people here who take great pride and joy in doing these things. Why not give it to them? So yes, I will get somebody to install the headlights for me. It's better that way. It's better for everybody. Anyway, my whole point in talking about this in the first place, other than to just sort of vent about all this, is to tell people that for the last 10 days I've been driving with the brights on, not a single person, not one person out there has flashed their lights at me to say, hey, moron, you got your brights on. And you know why that is? It's because everybody these days is driving with their brights on. This kind of confirms a suspicion I had that headlights are a lot brighter and in your eyes a lot more, making it a lot harder to see. All these fools, their SUVs, they either are driving with their brights on all the time, or they have these mega bright lights, and God forbid you flash them if they're on low beams, and then they flash the high beams at you, and you're blinded for a day. So, yeah, you know, this is another example. It might be a small example, but another example of the overall deterioration of our society, where we are constantly blinding each other and not caring. I figured, you know, people would be following me and yelling at me for having the brights on. But no, nobody cares. Nobody cares. So I'm wondering, am I at a disadvantage if I just use the low beams all the time? What's the point? Nice guys finish last. Maybe I should be like everybody else. And I also noticed when I bought the new headlights that they say much brighter than the old headlights. Super bright. I mean, isn't that bad if they're super bright and they're facing other people? I always thought it was. You've got your big double-decker SUVs with their bumpers, the height of your head, and lights shining down on you. It's simply, nobody cares anymore. There don't seem to be any standards or safety concerns. Oh, that's just what we have to deal with, I suppose. Of course, the big news of the week, Tammy Faye is gone. Yes, Tammy Faye Backer passed away. And I cannot believe how much news coverage this has gotten. And yes, I know I'm talking about it, but I'm talking about the news coverage, so it's slightly different. Give me a break. You'd think this was a queen, or a first lady, or Paris Hilton, or somebody, you know, somebody that was really important to our nation. This is somebody that we all laughed at. I remember years ago on The Voice of Long Island, the show I did here in the early 80s, we would play Tammy Faye Baker. Baker? Backer? It's 2Ks, so it's Backer, right? We never got that right either. Tammy Faye Backer. And, of course, now she was Tammy Faye Mesner because she got married again. We would play her late at night, like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and oh, we got so many laughs. So many laughs. Those were good times. And we owe that to Tammy Faye. But come on already. She was the wife of a disgraced televangelist. And she wore a lot of mascara, and people would play her records late at night on college radio stations. Don't know why that means that so much attention was devoted to her. But looking at the CNN site, it was unbelievable when this happened. The major headline, first of all, I don't think there should ever be a major headline, because there are so many other things going on in the world, but Tammy Faye Mesner dies. That's the big headline, big picture of her there. But they couldn't even get this right, because the story next to it was another Tammy Faye story. Tammy Faye faces mortality. How exactly is she pulling that off from beyond the grave? Obviously an old story that wasn't pulled. And it was the second story. First story, Tammy Faye dies. Second story, Tammy Faye faces mortality. That wasn't it. That was not it by any means. Beyond that, there was another link to a video that said Tammy Faye faces mortality. And then beyond that, there were, let's see, how many were there? Three more? Because she had just been interviewed on Larry King. Tammy Faye battles cancer. Tammy Faye American original. And then another one, Tammy Faye Mesner dies at 65. It's just the obsession. The obsession with this person was simply staggering. Something like six stories on one web page, which a lot of people go to read their news. It's really kind of ridiculous. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not gloating or anything like that. I'm not minimizing someone's death. I, you know, probably disagree with 99% of anything she ever stood for, but I'm still not cheering. I mean, Dick Cheney could keel over tomorrow. I would not be one of the people dancing in the streets. I know there are many people that would. A human life is something that I think is worthy of being valued, no matter who owns it. But there are degrees of importance that you attach to what certain people stand for. And again, I just see it all out of whack here. This happens a lot. It happens a lot in our media. All right, what else? We have more media stuff to talk about. Yeah, you know, we were talking about Newsday last week, Got some feedback for that. It's gotten to the point, and I see phone calls coming in. We'll take phone calls in a little bit. 631-632-9872. 631-632-WUSB. We were talking about how Newsday has this this comment board that's attached to their news stories, and with their banner headline above the page are the most hateful, racist rants that I've ever seen. And they're put online with the blessing of Newsday. And it's really sick. It really makes Long Island look like a horrible place. And it's basically like running a hate board, giving people the option to be as hateful as they possibly can. And this, of course, causes all sorts of bad feelings in return. I just wonder, what is the purpose here? It's certainly not freedom of speech. It's certainly not that, because opening up a graffiti board, which is basically what this is, and allowing anybody to say anything, yeah, you know, that's that is free speech, but as a newspaper, that's not what you should be pursuing. You should not be pursuing having anybody say anything about anybody. You're not under that obligation. That's why you edit articles. That's why you edit letters. That's why we have a delay system. Yeah, it's also because the FCC is scaring us, but it's quality control. Does that matter anymore? See, when freedom of speech is abridged, that means you're forbidden from saying anything. The government will come after you if you dare to utter something that is stupid or offensive or counter to what they believe in or stand for. That's not what's happening here. People have the right to be ignorant and obnoxious as much as they want. They can start websites, they can start their own publications, but why should supposedly legitimate publications hand over valuable space to these people? That is something, I mean, this is why we don't have a Klan hour. Yeah, there's a Klan out there, the K-Klan I'm talking about. But we have a sense of values, we have a sense of quality, we have a sense of justice. Apparently that doesn't translate over to Newsday. Now today, hopefully, we can start doing something about this, because this is really starting to annoy me a lot more. There's a story that appeared July 20th. I just want to read the story and then read some of the comments, and you'll see what I'm talking about here. A 13-year-old boy was arrested Thursday night just after he climbed out the window of a North Baldwin elementary school he'd burglarized, and another boy, 16, was arrested a short time later inside the school, according to Nassau County Police. Responding to a report of a burglary in progress at the Grand Avenue Elementary School at 10:10 p.m. on Thursday, officers saw the first boy leave a side window of the school and run through the back schoolyard where he was caught. This boy's name was not made public because he is a juvenile. Then the officers searched inside the school and found Kason Hargrove, and they gave his address, which I'm not going to do, on the basketball court. Both were charged with third-degree burglary. All right. You got a story of kids doing something stupid, breaking into a school. Has that ever happened in your life? Have you ever heard of anybody breaking into your school when you were growing up? I did. I didn't break in. I heard of people breaking in. Yeah, this kind of thing happens. People do stupid things. No kidding. All right. Made the newspaper. They got arrested. Hopefully that'll leave a mark and keep them from doing it again. Well, the remarks on Newsday were just, some of them were so hateful and offensive that I can't read them here. But one person responded in kind of the way I might respond. You all are a bunch of gross racists. Did you ever stop to think for a minute that maybe these stupid boys thought it would be fun to get into a school at night not meaning any harm? Just like going into an abandoned house at night or sneaking into Kings Park Psychiatric Center at night. Oh, have you ever done that? Kings Park Psychiatric Center. It's the most amazing building. It's an abandoned mental hospital, but it must be like 18 stories tall. And if you go there at night, it's the scariest thing in the world. You're just in the middle of this sort of darkened area, and you just see this huge building in front of you that's totally dark. And you realize that in the past, that's where mental patients were given lobotomies, and all sorts of horrible demons from the past are living there now in ghost form. Actually, I wouldn't want to break in there. That would be scary. But yeah, this is the kind of thing. I'm fascinated by places like that. I'll be careful, though, if you do go over there, because they have like a special kind of police there that will pull you over if they see you even looking at the place, so you got to be careful. Anyway, yeah, I just gave burglary tips. Not burglary tips, but breaking and entering tips, I guess, over the radio. But it's an abandoned building. Anyway, continuing with this letter. Sorry for the sidetrack. When I was growing up, all the stupid little kids thought that stuff was so cool. It's not about being black or Hispanic. Sometimes it's just about being stupid. Because everybody's pointing to, oh, my God, the kid's name is Kason. Well, you know what that means. You know, he's one of those people. Seriously, this is what's going on. Conversations that I thought ended in the 1950s are alive and well on the Newsday forums. So in response to this rather well-reasoned post, we're not gross racists, we're realists. Just read this regularly for a couple of weeks and see if you see any pattern. Yeah, the blacks are causing all the problems. Okay, and this person says, I am a gross racist. Yeah, not ashamed. I am tired of having some little black four-letter word robbing what I pay tax money for. Isn't it enough that their family robs the system of food stamps and welfare? Now they rob us, too. I do not want them in my neighborhood. I do not want to live with them or near them. So, Al Sharpton, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Oh, by the way, where was good old lard-ass Al when that white cop was killed? Now you see why I hate. This is the kind of crap they are printing in Newsday. And, yes, it's the same thing as printing a letter to the editor. It's online, as opposed to on paper. I wish it was on paper, because then people would wake up and see how horrible this is. And here's another comment. Wow, how shocking. Two gorillas from Hempstead robbing a place in Baldwin. Yeah, Newsday says it's perfectly okay to refer to black people as gorillas. That's fine. That's fine. No problem. Baldwin was recently named a great place to live because of its diversity. Only a liberal would say that. Diversity means higher crime rates and drug use. It amazes me that people still wonder why they don't want four-letter words living in their area. This is one reason. Even if they're near your town, they will invade it for the purpose of crime. Unbelievable. The only editing that Newsday did was to get rid of the four-letter words. Yeah, they replaced them with stars. That is the only edit. Perfectly okay to call black people gorillas. Perfectly okay to say that that you hate and you're proud of hating. My God. Simply cannot believe it. And then there's this other story. A real tragedy. Iranian surgeon killed by train. A man killed when he was struck by a train crossing tracks at the Syosset station was a thoracic surgeon from Iran living in Oyster Bay Cove. He was struck by an eastbound train as he crossed the tracks on foot at the Jackson Avenue grade crossing. The vehicle gates were down. The warning lights were flashing. Third person this year to be killed while crossing the tracks at a grade crossing. So, yeah. Big thing is, this guy was Iranian. Well, that means... Here's one of the nicer comments that were posted. Thank goodness he was never a doctor. I had. If he was not able to notice the train flying towards him, imagine what could have happened in surgery. You know, that's kind of disrespectful, but whatever. It's nothing compared to what follows. One less terrorist to deal with later on down the line. And tell me where the Muslim scum will be buried so I can piss on his grave. Thanks, Newsday, for adding to the positive image of Long Island. If this is upsetting you as much as it's upsetting me, here are some places that you can contact. The editor of Newsday can be emailed, editor@newsday.com. His name is John Mancini, M-A-N-C-I-N-I. Or the publisher, publisher@newsday.com. His name is Tim Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T. Mailing address, Newsday, 235 Pine Lawn Road, Melville, New York, 11747. If you want to call the newsroom, 631-843-2700. I'm sure they'll transfer you to the appropriate people. You want to write a letter? Letters@newsday.com. Editorials@newsday.com. It's all pretty much intuitive. Question is, will they listen? Will they respond? I will be writing a letter. No question about it. This kind of stuff just, it's so disturbing. And if you go to other newspapers, go to the New York Times. They have a forum, too. It's civilized. It's moderated. You don't have crap like this. You have intelligent discussion, which I imagine is what they wanted to do in the first place. These guys, they use something known as topics.net, T-O-P-I-X.net. I'm not familiar with the software, but apparently it's not very good so far. Maybe it's just as good as the people taking care of it. I don't know, but they basically, you can post anything you want, and it'll just go out there immediately with no moderation. It's not right. All right, what else is going on as far as ranting and raving? Anybody watch a program? This is kind of off the topic. They ever watch a program called John from Cincinnati? I started watching this program on HBO after The Sopranos ended because, well, there was just that void in my life, and I needed to have something to fill it on Sundays. It's basically, it's done by the guy who did Deadwood, the program about the really Wild West in the 1800s. Good program, a lot of cussing. But it's not the Old West as was portrayed in the John Wayne movies, which I think is a good thing. It's kind of realistic. Now, that program has been put aside in favor of this program. He's working on this one instead. And that one might not ever end as a result. That might be on the shelf forever. This program was billed as being, it's kind of strange, about the surfing culture. But it's about a little bit more than that. It's about this mysterious guy who appears to these surfing people, who are the most miserable people in the world. A family of surfers. Can you believe that? A family of surfers. The grandfather is a surfer, the father is a surfer, and the little kid is a surfer. And they're all really, really good. And it's based on reality. But they're the most miserable people in the world. For one thing, the little kid was in a surfing competition, and he broke his neck. Yeah, he got wiped out and he broke his neck and he was going to die. But then, because of all the mystery going on in this program, where somehow a bird is able to heal the kid like that. Well, in fairness, the kid also healed the bird in the past. I don't understand that. But the kid is healed. He's going to die. Now he's going to be fine. Yet, nobody cracks a smile. Nobody is happy. Everyone is still miserable. All they can do is yell and scream and bicker and drink and take drugs and mourn the past and fear the future. And within all this, you have this guy, John, who just appears out of nowhere and in kind of a strange way repeats what people say to him. Like when he was going out surfing with one of the people in his family, he's asked, is it possible that you've never actually been on a surfboard before? And his answer is, it is possible. Everything that you say to him, he basically throws back at you. It's kind of interesting to see how that works. He's one of the better characters. But I realize after watching this thing, I think now, what, 7 weeks? I have no idea what's going on. It's like watching a David Lynch film with even less direction than you might expect from David Lynch. David Lynch does it well. There's all kinds of mystery and strangeness, but you're left with a mood. You're left with a feeling. And what people say, although it might seem nonsensical, it actually does make sense in a way. Here, though, you just have a bunch of people who literally are standing around staring at each other in a parking lot for most of the time. You've got these two guys from Hawaii that are sitting in a motel room. I don't know why they're there. They're just there. And they're waiting for something. But they never say what. You have John from Cincinnati walking around saying all these nonsensical things to people, yet everybody is tolerating him. But the thing, I guess, that really gets me is the skill of acting in the program. Now, I'm not an actor. Most of my friends are not actors. But I think anybody would be able to deliver lines better than are being delivered here in this program. And I'm wondering, is bad acting a requirement? Does this director, his name is David Milch, by the way, not David Lynch, David Milch. Got a lot of the same letters, but totally different guy. It kind of works in the Old West to have people talking nonsensically because they're drinking a lot. But here, I don't know, I'm just not getting it. All kinds of people just talking into space and saying things that make no sense whatsoever and acting in bizarre ways. Listen to this. I took the liberty of getting a clip from the show. This is a scene where the grandmother, and that's another thing. The people in the program are unrealistically cast. This grandmother looks like she's no older than 40. You have so many blonde-haired, blue-eyed women that it's really hard to keep track of them all. Every week they introduce another one. And everybody looks really healthy and pretty much the same. It's kind of weird considering their pessimistic, miserable outlook. But listen to this, where she's basically trying to get somebody to go down to the store where they work because Sean, the kid, his mother has come back. She happens to be a porn star. That's not important to this. But she's come back, and now the grandmother is worried that she's going to try and steal the kid away from her. Now, when she had the kid years ago, she left the kid on her doorstep for the grandmother to raise. All right, so now you pretty much understand what's going on. She's gone over to this other woman's house, who's also kind of crazy, to get her to go down to the store and watch over the kid. Now, it's a simple premise. How would I deliver those lines? Hey, can you get your ass down to the store? The kid's mother is back. I'm worried that something's going to happen. Please, come down to the store and watch over him. And you know, if that woman comes by, I'm going to do something bad. All right? I'm terrible at this. But I think the way I delivered it is a lot more realistic than this.
Hey! Get to the shop!
I'm sorry about yesterday. Me and Butchie went looking for John.
Shut up! Get down there! Keep an eye on John!
Where should I pick him up?
He's there! No! Lock the door behind you! Don't let anybody in! That porno slut! Who made John with my scumbag son and left him on my doorstep for me to raise? He's back in IV. Don't let anybody in. He might have hired a lawyer to serve papers.
I'm going home.
So that if she comes back, I will be there to put a bullet in her heart.
Now, I have no idea what kind of acting coach this person has. It would make sense if she talked like that the rest of the time, but this is the only scene, really, where she emphasizes words in totally the wrong order and just shouts in bizarre places. It's almost like she's reading a foreign language that she doesn't understand. All right, so that's one character. Then you got the kid. Listen to how the kid delivers lines. This is also kind of strange. And you have to understand, they have plenty of time to get it right. The director can say, no, don't say it this way. Say it that way. But listen to this line. The kid is leaving the house. The grandmother is asking him where he got a particular pornographic DVD featuring his mother, who he found out was a porn star. So she's chasing after him in the driveway while he's leaving on his skateboard. Listen to how he delivers these lines.
Where did you get this?
Johnny!
You hurt my feelings, Graham. You did.
Okay, and then he's off on the skateboard. Now, okay, you know, at least you can understand what he's saying, but the emphasis is all wrong. If you had a discussion beforehand about your mother hurt your feelings, then you would emphasize the you and say, you hurt my feelings. You did. But the way you deliver the line, based on the conversation that came beforehand, is something like, you hurt my feelings, like that. Now, I don't blame the kid, because obviously somebody had to tell him to deliver it that way, or someone had to accept the fact that that's how the lines would be delivered, and not say anything else. I'm just wondering, what's going on in this program? I mean, the plot doesn't make any sense, but the way people deliver their lines doesn't make any sense either. Okay, this is for the grand prize here. If somebody can listen to this, this is the guy who plays John, the protagonist in the whole thing. And he's basically, this was last week's episode, where he's summing up everything. He's basically spitting back some lines that people have given to him over the weeks, and saying other things that are supposed to be profound. And somehow, this is supposed to make a degree of sense. If anybody out there can figure out what in God's name any of this means, I'd sure like to hear it. OTW@2600.com, that's our email address. Please let me know. I mean, you can study David Lynch films, and they do make sense. It takes you a while sometimes. But this, I've agonized over this, and I'm just not getting it. And I've cut a bit of empty space where people are just staring at each other and not saying anything. But most of this goes on where everybody's in this parking lot of a motel just kind of staring into space. And John from Cincinnati is apparently a vision because he's actually asleep in a car miles away. But he appears and says all this stuff, and, well, you tell me what it means.
If my words are yours, can you hear my father? Can Bill know my father, keeping his eye on me? Can I bone Kai and Butchie know my father instead? My father's shy doing his business. Kai helps my father dump out. Bill takes a shot. Shawnee is much improved. Joe is a doubting Thomas. Joe will save not Aleman. Joe will bring his buddies home.
This is how Freddy relaxes.
Cup of Joe and Winchell's variety dozen. Mitch catches a good wave. Mitch wipes out. Mitch wipes out Sissy. Sissy shows Butchie how to do that. Sissy wipes Butchie out. Butchie hurts Barry's head.
My father runs the Mega Millions.
Fur is big. Mud is big. The stick is big. The word is big. Fire is huge. The wheel is huge. The line and circle are big. On the wall, the line and circle are huge. On the wall, the man at the wall makes a man from the circle and line. The man at the wall makes a word on the wall from the circle and line. The word on the wall, here's my father.
The zeros and ones make the word in Cass's camera.
In the word on the wall that hears my father in Cass's camera, the good one Mitch catches doesn't wipe Sissy out. In the word that hears my father, Sissy shows Butchie something else. In my father's word, Sissy shows Butchie and Sean. In my father's word, Tina raises Sean at lunch. In Cass's camera, Butchie lays the court out for Barry, and Mr. Rollins watches. In Cass's camera, Butchie knows Kai has kept the faith. In my father's word, the wave lifts them up. In Cass's camera, Bill doesn't bump his head on the stairs. In Cass's camera, as long as he's being stupid, Bill gives Lois a kiss. In his word in Cass's camera, the internet is big. 9/11 is big, but not every towel head is eradicated. In his word, we are coming 9/11/14. In my father's word, Bill sees how Freddy relaxes. In Cass's camera, Ramon wants to know who's hungry in the courtyard and room 45. Father's word to come in Cass's camera, Dr. Smith calls Ocean Properties. In Cass's camera to come, my father stares not Aleman down, and Freddy sees Bill much improved. You will not note my father's word, nor remember Cass's camera, but you will not forget what we did here.
Okay, and that means that's supposed to be a significant statement, whatever it is we did here. If anybody knows what any of that means, please, please, please let me know, because it's driving me insane. If anyone even knows what 9/11/14 means, I'd sure like to know that one as well. Okay, and then the final clip, just to maybe finish out the award for bad acting. This is sort of everybody getting together and kicking out some reporters who had invaded the store to try and interview the kid who had miraculously been saved from a broken neck by a bird, although I don't think they knew that. There's some bad language here, which we've censored out with a 2600 hertz tone. And you'll hear the grandmother, you'll hear Sean, and you'll hear one of Sean's friends, and I think they're all competing for the bad acting award. Let's take a listen.
I guess it's a slow day for train wrecks, right? You pieces of newspaper asshole! I'll give you your camera and you take it outside!
How you feeling, Sean? How's your neck?
Get out of here, you piece of fuck out! Get the fuck out! boys say shit.
You get the hell out of here, too. Look at the mess you made.
What'd I do?
Okay. I don't know. I don't blame the actors. I don't blame them because they have to have somebody telling them to deliver lines that way. I just... Someone please explain. Jonathan Cincinnati, weirdest show ever, but weird in a not necessarily good way. And I can't see it possibly being renewed. I do like the idea that experimental things are going out over TV and that this should inspire those of you who are working on things that, hey, if this can get on, something you're working on might be able to be produced as well. Okay, a couple of letters here. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. If we have time, we can take a couple of calls if we get a few coming in. Last week we played this song, and we asked people to identify the language. Which will begin in a second, I think. Okay, so one person wrote in saying the song is in English, though largely incoherent. A good guess, but no. It's not largely incoherent either, it's just in a foreign language. And then we actually got a letter, which nailed it, from someone identified as EJSP. And forgive me for not pronouncing this right, because I'm sure I'm not going to. It's spelled C-Y-M-R-A-E-G. Kimrig? Simrig? I don't know. But it's a way of saying Welsh. And Welsh, he says, is a language, of course. Probably the best choice from the album for outro music. Actually, somehow this wound up on my iTunes, and it's the only song by them I have. If you go to Wales, you probably wouldn't want to call them Welsh. I think it's Simri, Simru, Gimri, or Gimru. And the person wants to know if Welsh is still avoided on Windows, Microsoft Office. And you know what? We didn't print out the title of the letter, which had the name of the band, which I forget. I'm sorry. If I remember next week, I'll tell you what the name of the band is. But this is a Welsh hit, apparently. Or a hit by a band that comes from Wales, or something like that. Okay, no calls. Let's go to another letter, then. Regarding your last show, one thing that strikes me as wrong with the public school system is the way kids are treated. Being a sophomore in high school, I can safely say that generally the accepted attitude is to treat students as if they're a major threat and give them less and less freedoms every time one of them has a problem. For example, the particular high school I'm going to had a problem with a group of freshmen breaking out into fights last year. Rather than try to constructively solve the problem by sending these people to the school counselor to see what their deal is, or making an attempt to reduce stress among the environment these freshmen are subjected to, they decided it would be a brilliant idea to shorten the time every student gets lunch, and shorten an entirely different 15-minute break period to a 5-minute break period. What's even more frustrating is that students will, for the most part, just accept this, and won't do anything to try to make the situation better. It just seems that neither the staff nor the students seem to care about what happens. I've established myself as an easy person to get along with, and for that reason I usually don't get picked on, but I can only imagine what it would be like having to put up with both of these issues, as well as a troubled family life. That's from Thought Freaker. Thanks for those thoughtful comments. And this is in response to the story last week about the plot by two kids to shoot up their high school, a local high school here in Long Island, and the reaction to that, and how such things have come about. And yeah, I think you're right on the money. The reason why students don't care, though, is because they're out of there in a couple of years. And they don't know the history. They come in and things are a certain way. You just have to assume that things are always that way. And if the administration could get more and more control every year, well, that's just great with them. Who's going to fight it? In response to the potential school shooting story, it was quite a while ago now, but back in high school, I was one of those people who got severely abused. I went home bloody around twice a week. I was thrown off the stairway landings for fun. People in the hallways would cut my legs with razor blades between classes. My God, what kind of school did you go to? Maybe that's normal these days, I don't know. Anyway, my father has a whole array of firearms, never locked up, by the way. And my uncle was a black powder hunter, which, it sounds like something from Harry Potter, black powder hunter, which gave me access to many pounds of black powder. I never even considered gunning down my classmates. Anyone under the age of 18 is the responsibility of their legal guardian. If they are so screwed up that they want to gun down their classmates, then their parents should be prosecuted. Long story short, if you are under the age of consent, you are not responsible. There is something really wrong with parents today that their children are this disturbed. Signed, Merrimus. You know, I agree with a lot of what you say here. I do, but what I don't agree with is that rational, normally reasonable people are not capable of doing something incredibly irrational. We all have that in us. And this is actually something that I find fault with both with creationists and with militant vegetarians. You never thought those two would be together, but people who think that they are somehow above the animal kingdom and that they are not animals. They didn't come from animals, or they are not capable of doing something that animals do, namely eating other animals. Of course, this is nothing, it's not a critique at all about vegetarians, because many of my friends are vegetarians. I'm talking about people who are, I guess, of the militant kind, who think that anyone who does this is scum. And forgetting that, you know, we came from a particular long chain of events, and there are things in us, there's barbarism in all of us. And it can be awakened. It's what makes people do horrible things when they're soldiers. It's what makes people go crazy and start shooting people. It's what makes people turn into horrible people. Because there is something inside all of us that can be awoken. We're all capable of murder at some point. If you think you're not, I think that's kind of unrealistic. Now, what it takes to get you to that stage, that varies tremendously. But I think it's within all of us. It's part of our genetic makeup. And by coming to terms with that, maybe we can understand how it won't control us, how to keep it from coming out at inopportune moments and doing horrible things. Okay, one more letter. Dear Manuel, I want to first urge you to continue talking about events that you experience at stores like Costco, as last week was hilarious. The topic of school shootings was also an extremely important and thoughtful issue last week that needs to be spoken about. Your program will allow other views and experiences to come out rather than the washed-down, simplified versions that are shown on television. We need to hear from people who have been through the system at the bottom, and survived without incident. From my own personal experience, I felt that the authority figures at my school took no action and simply viewed what was happening as boys will be boys behavior. They never disciplined those problem children and used them as examples as they should have. It forced me into a corner in the late 90s because there was no one to turn to. On a regular basis, I considered violence as my way out. My family life was excellent and parents were as loving as could be, so that was not the issue. Signed, Jeremy. Jeremy, thanks for that honest, thought-provoking letter. And yeah, we get pushed into corners. There's no telling what's going to happen. And if you're in a situation where you have access to things that really could prove deadly, the odds of that becoming intertwined with a burst of irrationality are so much greater. And that's the fact I think so many people miss. All right. Unfortunately, the calls are coming in now, came in so late that there's no time to take them. So let's make a vow next week. Let's call early, like around half past the hour. Next week is actually going to be the last live program for a little bit. So if you want to speak on the air, that's your chance. This is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. It's been a pleasure, as always. And we'd like to hear from you. OTW@2600.com. Let us know that you listen. And give us your opinions, your thoughts, your revelations. We'll see you next week. Good night.
London, England. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1, out on the island.